to make us feel awful, and certainly that it should not happen again. And I am not the expert on this, but my guest today is Dr. Peter Langman. Has written a wonderful book called Why Kids Kill Inside the Minds of School Shooters. It was named the outstanding academic title of 2009 by the American Library Association. He has been interviewed in hundreds and hundreds of media outlets in the United States, CNN, Fox, BBC, here globally, the Washington Post, New York Times, and certainly he is an expert on this. He has studied this. He has written this very insightful book that has been talked about. What does it say? Cited as congressional testimony on Capitol Hill. So he's really making a difference with his research and his book. And I want to welcome Dr. Peter Langman to Shannon's Corner. How are you today?
Very good, thank you.
Thank you so much for joining us and sharing your expertise on this. And, you know, as sad as this is, as I said, I think understanding it and delving into it and seeing what we can do differently so it doesn't happen again makes us feel like we're doing something. I know that most people think that, violence and media and all these things that we are doing in our society is creating this. But you do say that cannot be isolated as just the cause. So, I mean, I know there's no one particular cause you could say, but why are we seeing so much of more of this now when there's always been some mental health problems in this country and everywhere? Why are we seeing it manifested in school shootings?
Well, one thing I'd like to say is I'm not sure that we really are seeing it that much more now. What we tend to see is a few very high-profile cases, such as what just happened on Friday. But overall, the trend in violent crime in the United States, as well as in school-related homicide, is actually lower now than it was 20 years ago. So there's a big discrepancy between the day-to-day reality of school violence and people's perceptions of it based on an incident like Friday's attack.
But this stuff didn't seem to happen before. Yes, and I agree with you. I think that throughout history, things have always happened. And now, because we have 24/7 news, we think things just started happening now. And I don't believe that's true. There's always been horrific things throughout history. But we see it. It's in our face. If it happens in Indiana, we hear about it instantly. So it's not just our backyard anymore. But I do think that the way the violence is manifesting into schools seems new to us. And you're saying that is really not new? This has happened before? I mean, 20, 30 years ago, kids went into school and shot kids?
In fact, I would say that the closest similar attacks to what happened in Newtown happened in the United States twice in 1988 and once in 1989.
Okay.
And since then, what we've seen more is what people might think of as a typical school shooting, where a student goes into his own high school. That's much, much more common. What we saw Friday was an adult going into an elementary school. And that we haven't really seen in this country since 1989. But as I said, it happened three times in the late 80s. So in a sense, it's not something new, though that has not been the typical school shooting we're used to hearing about.
I hear you. No, I hear exactly what you're saying, and I don't disagree. But I do think that there is an element of copycat and an element of fame in a lot of these. I think that when you're disturbed, and you certainly know better than I, and you feel frustrated and hopeless and that no one's listening to you, that you know you will get attention if you do something horrific, because we give it a lot of media attention. Do you think that there's some fault in that, and do you think that that is a reward for doing this? Media attention?
Certainly, a number of school shooters have clearly indicated that they were influenced by school shooters who preceded them.
Mm-hmm.
And in some cases, notably, for example, Eric Harris of Columbine, he was thinking of world fame. And one of his quotes is, "I want to leave a lasting impression on the world." So they had even talked about sending the videotapes that he and Dylan Klebold had made to various news outlets. They were really focused on fame, and other shooters since then have also been motivated to some extent by knowing they were going to make a name for themselves.
Do you think that if we did not give their name out in the press, certainly we could talk about their profile, but just call it school shooter or shooter number six or whatever? Do you think that if we did not actually give their name and interview those that they knew in kindergarten and their next door neighbors, that this would take away some incentive? I mean, obviously, it's not going to take away everything, but it would take away that carrot that dangled at the end of the stick of some sort of twisted fame, that would help?
I think that might be a step in the right direction. Certainly, it's a challenge for the media because they want to cover the case.
Right.
But how you cover the case sensitively and so that you're not inadvertently glorifying the killer is a challenge. And, for example, with Virginia Tech and Sun Hui Cho, initially MSNBC was broadcasting the videos he made. And there was such an outcry and protest that they were giving worldwide recognition to a mass murderer that MSNBC stopped doing that. So I think, you know, people are learning there's a way to cover this that is not going to promote the killer in any way that might glorify him.
Yeah, no, I'm glad to hear you say that because that's my thoughts exactly. And I heard Anderson Cooper the other night say, look, we're not going to talk about his name. He's got enough attention. We need to give the attention to those that are suffering. So, and I think that's really important. I think that's taking one incentive out of it. But how about things like, you know, we hear certainly, do you think that the kids are desensitized from all the violence they see? And do you think that certain drugs are a part of this? And I'm not talking street drugs. I'm talking drugs from doctors, things for kids that have ADHD. Do you think some of these mental health drugs are part of the problem?
No, I don't. And I've looked into that because it is something that comes to a lot of people's minds.
Mm-hmm.
And there's actually a lot of misinformation online about that. And many shooters are claimed to have been taking certain medications at the time of their attack when they really weren't. And we often know that from autopsies if they ended up dying in the attacks. And in a recent study of 42 school shooters, I found that 6 had been taking something at the time, but that means 85% were not on any psychiatric medications. So, yes, medications can cause side effects. Do I think they're causing school shootings or making kids so psychotic or manic that they're losing control of themselves? No, I don't think so. I think there's long-standing underlying problems, and when they reach the breaking point, they lash out in violence.
Is there a way to see? I mean, you work with children all the time. You're certainly an expert in this. Is there a way to predict that breaking point? I mean, can you? I mean, obviously, we can't see into the future, but are there some children that you know that are going that you can see before they reach out to go that far? That there's indicators.
Well, what we talk about in the field is what's called threat assessment.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not really violence prediction per se, but it's paying attention to warning signs. And there's a couple classes of warning signs that are really important for people to know about. And one is called leakage, which refers to the killers leaking their plans, you know, disclosing what they're planning. And the other is attack-related behavior. And if you want, I can talk about each of those very briefly.
Yes, please do, yes.
Okay. Leakage takes various forms. It could be the kid trying to recruit a friend of his to join him in the attack.
Mm-hmm.
It could be a kid warning his friend to stay away from school because on Monday something bad is going to happen, so don't come to school that day.
Mm-hmm.
It could be kids bragging about what they're going to do. And sometimes they come right out and say, I'm going to come with a gun and kill you.
Ooh.
And unfortunately, people don't take them seriously, especially if they're younger, like young teens, 13, 14, 15. And there have been incidents where they did exactly what they said they were going to do.
So let me just interrupt you right here. So anytime you hear that, if you are in a school setting, if you are a teacher or an administrator, if you are a parent or a neighbor, you should bring this to someone's attention?
Absolutely. And that's the best way to stop an attack. And when attacks have been foiled, it's usually because a student came forward with what he or she heard.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So that's an important thing. We're going to take a break. When we come back, I want to talk about more of that. And I want to talk about the hopelessness that goes on. And I want to talk about what we can do. And I want to talk about everything we can to make us feel better and to understand that this is a localized problem, but it is a problem we need to talk with. We are talking with Dr. Peter Langman, and we'll be back here in just a few on WTBQ.
Company's coming. Hudson Valley Kitchen Design is here to help. If visions of no prep space, bumping into Aunt Sarah, and cold dinner rolls are dancing in your head, start making plans to improve for next year. We can create your ideal kitchen. Take the first step toward easier entertaining. Stop by our showroom at 2713 Route 17M in Goshen, or call us at 845-294-8242.
Are you spending too much for your business insurance? Do you have the proper coverage? WTVQ.
Hello and welcome back to Shannon's Corner. I am Shannon Devereaux Sanford, and don't go anywhere. We are talking about a very touchy subject, but one that we are all talking about, the recent school shootings. I am talking with Dr. Peter Langman, who is an expert on this and has written a very interesting and a very helpful book called Why Kids Kill, Inside the Mind of School Shooters. And, Dr. Langman, you are obviously clearly an expert on this. You have been interviewed by everyone throughout the United States and throughout the world, and you know about this. I mean, is the profile that we have that this is always just some shy, bullied kid in the corner just waiting to explode? Is that always the case?
Not at all, and that's a common misconception. I would say that very few school shooters are truly loners. I would refer, for example, to Sung Hui Cho as someone who was a loner. He had no friends. He had no girlfriends. He really lived a very isolated life. Shooter in this case may also have been a loner to that extent. But when you look at others, Harrison Klebold at Columbine not only had each other, but they had a pretty wide circle of friends, males and females, and they dated and hung out and so on. So the idea that these kids always look the same is really a misconception, and it's important to recognize that, because otherwise you might think you know who to watch out for, and you're going to miss kids who you never would have thought of as school shooters.
So anytime we hear anybody say something, that is certainly a big red flag. But kids talk like this all the time. They watch video games that are angry and they blow people up. And it's kind of cool. I interviewed a few people, and I kind of believe it's obviously, you know, here's another question I want to ask you, that it's always boys, not girls, right? So it's clearly, why is it always boys, not girls?
Well, again, let me make a point here. It's usually boys.
Okay.
Usually males, not females, but there was a 16-year-old female school shooter way back in 1979. There was a 19-year-old female at Penn State in 1996. Mm. Just a couple years ago, we had Professor Amy Bishop at the University of Alabama gun down six people in her department, and there have been others. Mm. So
okay.
It's not uniquely male, but that's a question that everyone asks.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there's no simple answer. We can talk about biology, and we can talk about culture, but whenever it comes to any sort of violent crime, it's predominantly male. So if you look at any sort of violent crime, not just school shootings, you're going to see generally the vast majority of the perpetrators are male. So school shootings are no different from other violent crimes in that respect.
And so you don't think that's anything new, and that we're not, I mean, I've interviewed people from the Gurion Institute and Dr. James Garbruno. You probably know who both of those are, and they wrote books exactly like that, that we are failing our boys, that we are not giving them an outlet, we're not making them heroes, we're not giving them enough structure and places to go and a rite of passage, and that this is why they are so angry. And do you think that that is something new, or this is just all, it's just, again, it's always been happening this way, we're just now focusing on it?
I think to some extent it is new. Not as new as people think, but it does seem like, especially in the 1990s, there was a lot more of these kinds of incidents happening, especially in high schools around the country and sometimes even middle schools. It's hard to comment on the widespread cultural issues when you have a phenomenon that is really this statistically rare. So out of maybe 75 million students in the country, you get one or two of these a year. It's hard to say if they really represent a trend in American culture. Is this the failure of America to raise its young men properly? Or is it really just a few very rare, very disturbed people?
Okay, so and when, with all your research and writing the book, did you find there was any one particular thing that was that was with all of the shooters? Is there one particular aspect of their life, a hopelessness or an anger, or that they did well in school or they didn't do well in school, or their parents were divorced, or they were not close with their parents, or I mean, is there any one particular thing that seems to be a theme that runs through all of this?
You know, it's hard to make a statement that would be true of all school shooters.
Yeah.
So there's no profile. What I present in my book is that there's three distinct categories of people who typically do this. Finding something that's true of all of them is difficult. You could say, for the most part, they're all very, very angry.
Mm-hmm.
The reasons that they're angry may be very different, but if there's something that's a common denominator, that may be as close as you can get.
Yeah, anger. Well, that, you know, obviously, clearly anger has to fuel that. And, you know, I asked this before, and I'm going to ask it very specifically, because there's not anybody that anyone talks to that doesn't believe our culture of violence in media, in video games, in film, is not a part of this. Do you think that there is more, there's more violence because we see more violence?
I think for kids who are vulnerable, who are struggling with their identities, with their lives.
Mm.
I think the violent video games they play, sometimes movies like Natural Born Killers,
yeah,
have kind of inspired them and set role models for them. So I do think that for that small percentage of kids who are on the edge, exposure to violent media does play a part and can help push them over that edge.
Well, and we glamorize it. I mean, you know, we get excited when they kill, oh, wow, they killed 12 people in that movie. So cool. You know, I mean, that obviously, you know, this is not the way to work out our problems. And if we teach kids that early on, and obviously you're clearly right, and you say this through, I know through your book, that you have to already have a kid that's troubled. I mean, you know, everybody else can watch these films and do these video games, and they're not going to do anything. Most people know the difference, but all you need is one in every million, and we're in trouble. So clearly, we don't need any of that, but we need to change. Do you think we need to change things in our culture?
I would like to see a much greater accessibility and acceptance of mental health treatment.
Uh-huh.
You know, that it shouldn't be stigmatized if someone's depressed or anxious, that getting help from a counselor or therapist should be as routine as seeing your family practice physician.
Yeah.
And that if we had more access, more funding, more resources, I think we could greatly reduce the amount of violence in this culture.
I think that's an excellent point. I mean, and there's still a stigma about going somewhere for help. And unfortunately, that's really bad. And of course, it's cost, it's insurance, it's a lot of things. But you're right, if it was as easy as going to just to your local doctor for, you know, a cold or a flu shot, which it should be, that would be very helpful. But certainly, we have about one more minute, and I know this is not part of your research, but what do you think about guns and gun control? Do you think that there's something to be dealt with there?
Well, a couple of thoughts real quickly. One, if we limited the access to these high-powered military weapons,
mm-hmm,
that would be a step in the right direction, in my opinion. Also, I think perhaps the most pressing issue is for parents, especially when they know their kids are troubled, not to have guns accessible in the house. We have repeatedly seen school shooters just get bombed, bad grandpa's guns, and go to school and kill people. And several times, they've killed their own parents. So
yeah, that's true.
That's what we saw Friday. That's not the first time a shooter has killed family members before going to school. The guns are right there in the homes. The kids are troubled. Parents often know their kids are troubled. It's just a dangerous combination.
It is a dangerous combination, and I think this is really a clear example of it. I mean, obviously, the mother's not here to say it, but, you know, it's absolutely a clear example of it. Dr. Peter Langman, I thank you so much for joining us and really giving us some great insight to this very sad story. And hopefully, I think talking about it is going to help make it better. You know, get the help we need, get the mental health counseling we need, and get everyone paying attention. And I think putting a light to it is a step in the right direction, and I thank you so much for sharing everything you know with us.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you very much. Again, that's Dr. Peter Langman. His book is, why do I not have it right in front of me? Why Kids Kill, Inside the Mind of School Shooters. Terrific book. Really excellent, excellent research. Anyway, I thank everybody for joining us today. And in this sad time, I hope that we've helped shed some light on all of this, because we can make a difference. And he's absolutely right. Mental health is really important in this country. We do have to wrap it up for today, but thanks for joining us. And until next time, don't forget to make good choices.